This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The Bulletin.
It is 10:41. It is Wednesday, and it is time for Andrew Gordy, and that makes me very, very happy indeed. And Gord, so welcome into the show this morning. We just had a chat with Pete Winchester, who spoke on behalf of the provincial rugby unions, and it's all about the board, the makeup, the numbers of the board, and who's represented. And I don't know if that was a massive secret, but at least we know now.
Yeah, exactly right, Smitty. Morning to you. Morning to all the listeners. It's turning into a bit of a mess, this story, really, isn't it? And it's just, unfortunately, it's a continuation of some of the problems that have dogged New Zealand rugby for years. And the big question is, who has the power? And unfortunately, I think that rugby has quite simply moved into a different time and a different era. And, you know, rugby has been, unfortunately, for far too long, governed by these old principles, old laws, that are sort of reflective of a bygone era. We've moved past that now. And rugby is just like many other sports in a fight for survival. And I understand where the provincial unions are coming from. I understand why they want to ensure that their voice is heard in terms of looking after the grassroots of the game, both from, you know, right through from junior level through to senior club rugby level. And it's about ensuring that communities are served by clubs, which are important. They are absolutely vital in it when it comes to, you know, rugby continuing in this country. But there is a top end that needs to be considered as well. And I think there needs to be a balance struck. Clearly, all parties are finding it difficult to find this balance. But I don't think that having an over-representation of provincial unions and the governance of New Zealand rugby is the way forward in 2024. I think that needs to change.
I think he was saying three out of nine don't have to be, but they have to have some experience. I mean, and he's saying on provincial unions, there are probably very much a number of people who are sitting on provincial unions who are quite nicely qualified business-wise in terms of acumen and that as well. Bearing in mind also, of course, is the 40% rule on women's representation on sporting boards in this country as well. What is an ideal board member, Gords? What is an ideal mix then?
Well, yeah, an ideal board member obviously has a range of skills. It's not necessarily that every single board member needs to have a range of skills, though. The board needs to have a range of skills. So you might have one person who has skills in one area but not another, and you balance that out. You know, that's what having diversity of skill, you know, diversity means a whole lot of things, but that includes skills as well. To be perfectly honest, Smithy, I think 3 out of 9 is far too much. That's an overrepresentation on a board for provincial unions who, like I say, their sway in the game, their importance in the game is not what it used to be. That's not to say they're not important, but 1/3, I think, is an overrepresentation. So, you know, whether there's going to be any wriggle room on that, whether there's a specific reason why they're hanging on to 1/3, I'm not sure. But yeah, I don't doubt that there's people on, you know, who are candidates for these roles that have, you know, business acumen, business experience, who would have something to offer and obviously be able to reflect, you know, the needs of the provincial and the grassroots game for sure. But also, Smithy, I think there'd be a strong argument to say that some of those people have been hanging out for this moment for their entire lives. And actually, you know, some people, I'm sure, would be thinking, this is my opportunity to have the power and the influence. And that's not what the game needs right now. It doesn't need power-hungry people striving to climb to the top so that they can have influence for the first time in their lives. I don't think that's what rugby needs.
Okay, interesting, right. He said it has to come to a head. It simply has to. It's been, 8 or 9 months now. So it's very shortly, it just has to come to a head. Whether it was that to determine mediation or someone like I understand it, but I don't get it, if you get my drift. Geordie Barrett, off to Leinster. Tyler Blaindell, off to Leinster.
I absolutely love that Geordie Barrett is going to Leinster. I found it fascinating, actually, yesterday to look, and this is the story we focused on the News Hub last night, is just the reaction to this news. It has lit up the Northern Hemisphere rugby scene. I think there's a few fans up there that are sort of looking at it and going, did Leinster really need this? But they've got it. And Geordie Barrett is going to be a fantastic addition, not just to Leinster, but to the Northern Hemisphere rugby scene. And it's going to be great for him, great for New Zealand rugby, for him to get that exposure. I have no doubt that he's going to enjoy playing some of the golf courses in and around Ireland and the UK, and wouldn't be at all surprised if that formed part of his decision. But I actually think it's refreshing. I think it's refreshing that we're seeing a player, you know, not just take the option of making bank in Japan for 6 months, which, don't get me wrong, I don't begrudge any player of that, but it's just a refreshing change, and I think he's going to get an entirely different challenge up there. And yeah, I think it's going to be fascinating to, I suppose, watch the reaction to his input and what he's able to offer Leinster. And I hope that other All Blacks in his position in the future might, like him, consider their options about where they might choose to take their sabbatical. I think the thing that it says to me, Smithy, is it further enhances just how strong the All Blacks brand is. Like, there is genuine excitement up there that it's not a former All Black coming up. It's you know, a player who's perhaps fallen out of favour or has decided, oh, their time in New Zealand rugby's over, I'm going to, you know, head up to the Northern Hemisphere for a change in, you know, 2 or 3 year contract and make bank. That this guy's going in the prime of his career. So, you know, it's hugely exciting for them to have a current leading All Black join their competition. So, yeah, very exciting and thrilled for Geordie that he's made this call.
Absolutely. I can see Ryan Fox and it just came to me, actually, Ryan Fox and Geordie Barrett teeing it up in the Arthur Dunhill, Alfred Dunhill Cup. That makes mouth watering, doesn't it? Okay, Gords, every now and then, I think once a year or once every 2 years, we ask this question, predominantly when it happens, and it doesn't happen very often, we have a draw in rugby league. What to do with Golden Point?
I've got no problem with Golden Point, Smithy. I see. Like, I mean, just if we're taking, you know, the weekend's game in isolation, it added so much drama to the match, didn't it? I thought it was incredible the Warriors actually clawed themselves back to get into the match. I mean, you know, with 10 minutes to go, you thought this was over. So to claw it back and be able to take it to Golden Point was brilliant. And I love the extra time. And, you know, yep, sure, there was a draw, but I don't think you can go on forever. I think there's some fundamentals about that mean you can't just keep playing and keep playing and keep playing until you get a goal. You know, I think football tried that with golden goal. Do you remember that? They tried that for a while. It would just keep playing essentially until you get a goal. I don't think that, you know, broadcasters and that can handle that sort of concept or accommodate for that sort of concept. So I think you do need still a set time, but it would obviously be nice to see a winner. But you're giving the players the opportunity to do that. So personally, I've got no problem with Golden Point. I think it's actually good for the game. And yeah, I don't really understand the criticism behind it. I think it's only something that adds to the competition for me.
Something different, Gords, but I know you're a fan of racing. We talked touched on this with George Simon on Monday. Incredible performance of Pride of Jenny's in the Queen Elizabeth at the weekend, which was an unbelievable spectacle. It's like, she's got to come back. She's got to come back. She's got to come back. She didn't come back. She kept going. And George was saying there probably would have been ramifications in the stewards' room because of that on behalf of the other jockeys.
Yeah, I, like you, Smithy, I just found it an utterly incredible spectacle. I mean, you watch enough racing, you know, you see these sorts of daring tactics from jockeys every now and then. You know, a lot of the time it doesn't pay off and you see the horse absolutely gassed and they get past with 200 metres to go and they've set a steering pace. But What I just found fascinating about it is the margin became so, so wide that it was very obvious, certainly with 1,000 metres to go, that the chasing pack, if you can even call them that, the rest of the pack were not going to catch Pride of Jenny. Incredible tactics from Declan Bates. I think the question for me, Smithy, is what went on? What went on in that chasing pack? I mean, James McDonald obviously was one of the jockeys that came back into the jockey's room afterwards and simply said embarrassing. And I can understand how, from his perspective, it probably was embarrassing. He was riding the favourite. He had taken his mount to the back of the field. I think James, you could see watching the race that James could sense, hey, this is getting out of hand here. And he started to press up on his mount. But then, obviously, there's criticism for Craig Williams, who was riding Mr. Brightside, whether perhaps he should have forced the tempo, but he's riding his own race. Now, I think there's a balance to be struck there. Sure, you might be riding your own race under the tactics and the guidance, I suppose, or the instructions of the trainer and the owners and how they want to see you ride a race. But when the horse in front is 38 lengths clear, there's got to be a change. And I'm curious, Smithy, to know what's actually going on. Are the jockeys in the chasing pack, are they talking to each other out there? Are they actually in the moment going, are we all going to move collectively together, or are we all racing for second here? I think it'd be fascinating to get a jockey's perspective on what was actually going on in that moment. Do they all just stay dead silent and make their own personal decisions in that moment? Because none of you are going to win this race unless you all collectively make a decision to move together as a pack to mow down Pride of Jenny. Like I say, full credit to Declan Bates for his tactics, and boy, did it pay off in one of the biggest races, obviously, in the Sydney Championships. But yeah, it did leave question marks from a punter's perspective. But boy, oh boy, you look at it from the marketing point of view, that race has gone around the world and captured the attention of people who are not interested in racing at all, because it's such a novelty that people go, what on earth is going on here? You know, like you sort of see these tactics sometimes in a rating 65 at Riverton, but not in a Group 1 at Randwick in the Queen Elizabeth Stakes. So yeah, fascinating race that has really captured the attention of people outside of racing. And the fact that we're still talking about it, Smithy, on a Wednesday just shows what an actual, just a fascinating moment in sport we saw there at Randwick on the weekend.
And Gorge, just finally, got about a minute and a half here, but I'd love your views. And this has just come through, and I'm astounded by this. I've got a text to back it up. They're knocking the Canterbury A&P show on the head after, what, how many years? And how? What does this say about life at the moment?
Yeah, it's not great hearing that sort of thing, is it, Smithy? Very sad, obviously. Like, the Canterbury A&P show is, you know, it's part of growing up in Christchurch. And you know, A&P shows in general are part of growing up. And, you know, that connection to the rural community is vitally important. It's really important for kids, I think, as well, growing up in the city. You know, the country comes to town sort of thing. And that's actually a wonderful sort of moment, occasion for young kids. You know, when you've got your own young kids, exposing them to an A&P show is wonderful, and they absolutely love it. But it's really important for the rural community as well, to showcase, you know, what they have and what they offer. It's really important for business as well, for rural business. So I think that's a terrible shame to hear that. And yeah, I'm hearing it in real time, obviously, from you right now. So yeah, that's really sad and disappointing to hear. But gee, Smithy, it is in a way a sign of the times. And I know there's lots of other, you know, industries and businesses at the moment that are going through a very, very similar thing. They're obviously close to home, for sure. But, you know, change is inevitable. And I suppose if there's no AMP show, I'd back the rural community to find a way to adapt, because they're going to need to.
Andrew Gordy, as always, absolutely fantastic. I sprung that one on you late, mate, but just raised my eyebrows, because when you see icons falling over Gords, you really do sit up and take notice, and that is an icon. It is 10:54, back very soon.